You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
There are many different paths you can take, but there's only one. Road to Atlanta.
The high drive deep out to left field. He clubbed it. Brady twisting and turning, looking up and giving up. It's a home run for Dansby Swanson. Flair out towards shallow right. That's big trouble. Albies going back. He dives and he makes the catch. What a play, Ozzie Albies. Swanson is headed for three. He'll try for an inside the Parker. Relay throw comes toward the plate. He'll score standing, and it's his second inside the park home run of the season.
This is your weekly podcast dedicated to the Atlanta Braves farm system. Follow the show on Twitter at @Road2Atlanta. Now, hit the road with your hosts, Eric Cole, Gaurav Vidak, and Garrett Spang.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Road to Atlanta, a podcast devoted solely to the Braves farm system and Braves prospects. I am one of your hosts, Eric Cole. You may recognize me from my work over on TalkingChop.com, on the previous iteration of Road to Atlanta, or on over on Twitter at Leprechaun with a K. Joining me as usual, we have Gaurav Vidak and Matt Powers, who have been joining me every week since we've relaunched the Road to Atlanta podcast. They've been working with me over at Talking Chop for a long time. We love talking about baseball, especially minor league baseball. We do it every day, and once a week we decide to give you guys a little bit of a window into kind of what types of conversations we are having on basically a daily basis. Gaurav, how are you, sir?
I'm doing really well, man. I'm excited to drop this this video tomorrow as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. Make sure that you guys are going over to YouTube because we have a Road to Atlanta YouTube channel now. And there's going to be – Gaurav is kind of spearheading a lot of video work that we're going to – that he's going to be doing. I'll probably be chipping in here and there, assuming we can get Matt to move to the Atlanta area. We can maybe get him involved in that as well. But this is going to be kind of more of a – like a fun sort of – shedding some lights on the people and the personalities surrounding the Braves. I believe the video coming out is a kind of a longer form interview with maybe some video games involved with Jim Powell.
Yeah, correct. So it ended up being what was in place was supposed to be a standard like 15 to 20 minute interview, but he was so amazing. It ended up lasting almost an hour. So we actually broke it down into about three segments and we're going back and forth. We're playing Call of Duty. It's just a fun time.
I'm looking forward to it because, I mean, I like those types of stories because we do a lot of kind of like deep dive analysis of the minor leagues and the major leagues. But like the stories of the people behind the people really do like matter quite a bit. And we want to kind of shed some light on those types of stories. And Jim Powell's been around for a long time. And I do like him as a like on the radio broadcast. I greatly prefer the radio broadcast to the television one. It's certainly gotten better this year, but overall, I definitely prefer the radio. So it's nice that you had a chance to sit down with him and, you know, get to know him a little bit better beyond just the kind of, you know, just that voice of the sort of the Braves broadcast. Matt, how are you, man? What's going on with you?
Great at this point. Just waiting for the draft to approach. At this point, we're really starting to get up closer and find out a lot more information that's coming out, both the true information and the intentional false information that gets put out around the draft.
Yeah, I want all of you to love anything as much as Matt loves the draft. I mean, like, I get probably, I don't know, I would say around 50 messages from him a day, whether it be in our group chat or just to me, about what's going on with the draft or what we think's going on with the draft and what could be in play and what could not be in play. And this information changes constantly, and Matt is really on top of kind of collating all that information. You know, Matt's gonna have his opinions, and obviously all of us are gonna have our different opinions, but what's fascinating is kind of how the narrative and how the where players are gonna get picked and what teams are trying to do, how that evolves right up until draft day. And that's gonna be something that changes, and we're gonna do our best to keep you up to date with that. With that in mind, next week is going to be a big part of that, is that we're going to have one Carlos Collazo from Baseball America, their newly minted draft guru and former Talking Chop writer. He's going to come and join us, and we're going to do a deep dive into kind of what's going on with the draft. We're going to, you know, trying to get make sense of what the Braves could be doing and who they're looking at for the moment anyway. Again, we still think there's a lot of information that's being, you know, they're still trying to figure out, you know, what they can sign guys for, who they think are going to be available. So don't expect anything definitive next week, but Carlos is great. He's really kind of plugged into the whole process, and hopefully we'll be able to get some more information. Also, the current plan is to have Kylie McDaniel back on the podcast before the draft. It's a little bit tricky for him because he's traveling a lot to watch draft prospects and things like that. We were going to try to have him on this week. Couldn't quite make it work in terms of scheduling. He was just kind of bouncing. He's bouncing all over the country and having to do a lot of other different stuff, especially with his responsibilities over in Fangraphs. So the current plan is to try to have him on soon before the draft, but I would imagine it would be probably not the week after Carlos is on in some form or fashion. We'll see what happens. But that's not really what we're here to talk about. We're going to be doing a bit of a mailbag episode this go around in the meantime while we're kind of in a bit of a holding pattern, partially because we haven't really – there's not a whole lot of crazy news other than the Austin Riley promotion, which Gaurav's going to talk about here in a second. But we're going to go over some few top performers, and then we did ask for some questions on Twitter, and we're going to kind of go over those and go forth. So, Gaurav, give us your kind of the top performers, and I'm one of those names in particular is going to, you know, kind of come up. You know, is going to be a familiar one if you've been listening the last few weeks.
So Austin Riley has a 1.212 OPS over his last 10 games over in Gwinnett. And then he comes up here and after one game, his OPS is even higher. And then earlier in this game, he hits a home run or not a home run, but a ball that should have been a home run had he had like, if he could bench maybe an ounce more, it would go like half an inch more and count as a two-run.
Or hit it anywhere else in the ballpark.
Literally anywhere else, and it's a home run. Like, the guy is unconscious right now. He's not getting fooled by anything. Elite speed isn't a problem for him. He's recognized. Yeah, I don't know. I never understood that. He's seeing the ball at an incredible level. He hasn't walked in the majors yet, but again, it's one game. He's not striking out. He's walking well. When he makes contact, he's matching the ball. He still provides really good value, defensively at third. I'm interested in when that first start at third is going to be, and I wanted to see how he does. But, you know, in Gwinnett, he was doing fantastic. Left field, it's been interesting. He doesn't have the greatest range. But again, I'm basing it off a sample size of one game, so who knows? But the guy's not going anywhere. He's going to be in Atlanta for the rest. I'm so excited.
And I do just want to make that comment. You said he's not striking out, but that's not actually true. It only happens when Gaurav decides to tweet out before the at-bat.
Literally, like 2 seconds later.
Gaurav is absolutely the kiss of death. If you want someone to have a bad game, have Gaurav say he's going to go nuts. particularly Austin Riley not striking out. He will strike out. It's 100% going to happen. Who else have you got?
I mean, one of the I wanted to talk about a certain player, but I think we have another player that's we're going to be talking about a little later. Over in Gwinnett as well, but another shout out, I guess, to Adam Duvall, who hit his 13th home run of the season. It really seems like, I don't know how much is the AAA ball is impacting. I'm sure it has to do with those power numbers, but you know, he's doing extremely well. He's forcing the Braves to try and make some interesting decisions about possibly like adding him on the bench. You add him on the bench too, and you have people like Camargo, you have Duvall, you are creating a very, very good lineup. They just need the pitchers to work out now. But, like, this lineup not only is super young, but it's filled with talent. And with Dansby starting to hit his stride, like, Atlanta, they're looking good for the next, like, 6 to 8 years. This is really fun baseball to watch.
See, I think it's more likely that they move Duvall, honestly, because I just don't think that they're going to move Matt Joyce out of the role that he's in. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that they could get more value out of maybe trading Duvall away. And keeping Matt.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But it's interesting just because of how well he's played. I mean, Rafael Ortega in Gwinnett's played really well. That whole outfield, like, especially when Austin Riley was mashing in there, like, that outfield was insane. And, it, like, Gwinnett hasn't skipped a beat, you know, with Austin Riley getting promoted. Like, everyone's hitting home runs. And it makes you wonder kind of what's in the water down there. But overall, I agree. We do have another. I know that Gaurav has specifically wanted a guy. We have a talk. We got a question in the mailbag about that guy, so we'll kind of push that back just a little bit. But Matt, who have you got in terms of top performers?
So I'll go with the new guy first instead of the guy that we've been talking about a lot. But Kyle Muller has really started to stand out, and you have forgotten about the start of the year already. He was not very good in April. I mean, he was just not able to find the strike zone. The first three times he started, he didn't even make it four innings in any of those starts. I think he walked six guys. From there, he got a little bit better, but, I mean, there was still a five-walk start in there, and the command was just such a mess through those first five starts of the year, but he's really turned it around since. I mean, actually, it was his first May start that really seemed to be the start of him turning the corner. He went on May 5th, seven innings with just three walks, no earned runs given up. Then another seven innings on the 10th, he walked two, gave up a run. And then his most recent start was yesterday, and he went 6 2/3, gave up an earned run, only walked two. So from a guy who was walking 4, 4, 6, 5, with the lone exception in there being two over 5 1/3, to having walked a total of seven guys over his last 20 2/3 innings. I mean, he's finally hitting the strike zone, pitching well. He's given up two earned runs over those 20 2/3 innings. He's also struck out 16 in that time, with a couple six strikeout games in there as well. I mean, you can't ask for him to be doing much better considering he's, 21 at this point, and he's already in Double A. So he's just right now pitching like the guy that we were hoping he would be at the start of the year.
It's a little insane that he's 21, because it feels like he's been around for a long time. Like, this is also including a season where he was held back in rookie ball because, like, his velocity was down and he couldn't, like, command the ball to save his life. He is a story of how, like, Driveline's program. I don't think Driveline's program helps everybody in terms of, like, you know, like, pitching, you know, their pitching coaching philosophy and kind of how they do things. But I think it really does help some people, and it really helped Kyle. He got his velocity way back up there again, kind of worked out of those, a lot of mechanical issues he had. And he throws gas. Like, it's like 96, 97 now. And, maybe a touch more if he really reaches back for it. It's all about commanding it, obviously. And there are certainly strides being made, you know what I mean? And, you know, yes, the 28 walks in 39 innings this year is a little bit unsightly, but Matt's 100% right. It's definitely been trending better, and it's something we're watching closely because we really like Kyle coming into the year, and there's a lot of things to like about in terms of, like, you know, the videos that are coming out of the offseason about how hard he was throwing. But overall, I agree. He's kind of one of those guys that we kind of forget about with just the sheer number of pitching prospects. Even in his own rotation, there's a lot of guys who maybe get a little bit more press than he does, but he's been good despite the walks. He's still been, you know, limiting the damage overall. So who else have you got?
And the guy that we've talked about before, you just can't not talk about him, Trey Harris. I mean, if you look at his numbers in the last, what is it, nine games or so at this point, he's 13 for his last 27. So he's basically hitting 500 or so since the last time we actually recorded. He's got a homer in there. He's got eight RBIs in that time. He has walking as much as he's striking out. All this guy is doing is hitting, and he's hitting at a very high level. Like, I just, at this point, don't understand why this 23-year-old who is hitting this, listen to this triple slash line on the year, 383, 461, 586. That's a 1048 OPS. Why is he still in Rome? I mean, you can't ask for him to do anything more than what he's doing.
Yeah, I agree. I know it's those early season promotions can be tricky because you kind of have to figure out the spots above you, but he doesn't belong there. He just doesn't belong in Rome. He's too good for that league. He's the best. I think he's the best hitter in the South Atlantic League right now. Not saying he's the best prospect. That's not what I mean. Just in terms of just overall hitting ability, where he's at right now, he doesn't belong there. He needs to be getting to high A. I don't think, you know, given his age, it wouldn't be crazy if they put him in Double A, but I think more likely a move to high A is going to be likely, and I would imagine it has to come soon. He's going to his way out of the league, and he has to figure out, the Braves have to figure out what they have in him rather than just, you know, let him waste away in Rome. It's just a waste. That's what it is.
I mean, the only reason you could think of keeping him in Rome is the outfield defense could use some work. I mean, he's got the athleticism, and I think he's going to end up being a very strong defender in the outfield. I think it's just a matter of the fact that, and I wrote about this earlier in the week, what I saw when I saw the Rome team, that he played so much second base in college that he's getting used to the reads and routes of an outfielder a little bit and just needs that time to develop. But it's the minor leagues. Having him make some slight errors defensively where he still has the speed to recover is well worth it to promote him just to keep the bat challenged.
Well, my thing about that is if you want to see a guy that get a bunch of fly balls that are actually in play that normally shouldn't be and you want to see what he can get to and what he can't, you should send him to the Florida State League because that's where home runs and fly balls go to die. And I don't know. I get that there's like a lot of moving parts to, you know, moving guys in roster spots, especially position players, pitchers, you know, you can kind of make things work and, you know, squeeze guys in, you know, with rotation spots and, you know, kind of moving, you know, going to six man rotations kind of sorta and things like that. But he needs to be moved up. It's just that simple. The only name I'm going to mention, for mine, cause you guys named some really good ones and we have some others that we're going to kind of be covering in the mailbag part of this. I'm going to keep jumping up and down on Hayden Deal until he either proves me that he's not going to just be completely lights out or he's promoted because this guy's been insane. He has made 7 starts this year and in 6 of them, he has given up 1 earned run or less. The other start, he gave up 2. He's striking out batters. He's not walking a ton of guys. A couple, you know, he had a 3-walk game and a 4-walk game. All the other ones have been exemplary. Opposing batters are batting 188 against him. And what interests me about him is that I think he could stick as a starter. I truly do. But what's interesting about me is that his profile overall becomes a lot more interesting because he doesn't have the platoon splits you would expect. And we've talked about this a little bit before. Is that obviously the lefty on lefty matchup that's going to favor him. You know, he obviously throwing from that left side. That's going to give him, you know, he's going to have some advantages over left-handed batters, but he's actually been performing better against righties. And again, I've talked to a few people about this and this is going to be an article coming out probably sometime next week is that he has a really good cutter. I've talked to one scout that said they put a 55 on it right now. And when you have a cutter that you can, and then you also have a fastball that's, you know, more true that you can throw 93, 94 and the cutter's 90, 91, 92, something like that. Your profile becomes pretty interesting because there's not a lot of guys with like really good cutters. We've seen some in the major leagues. In particular, we've seen like Kluber has a good one. We've seen, James Paxton from the left side has a good one. When AJ Minter is right, his is really good. These are all a pitch that you don't necessarily see people who are really good at and you have to have a lot of feel for. And Hayden seemingly has it. And, you know, the guy has a 1.3 ERA and granted it's in the Florida State League. So you have to kind of keep that in mind in terms of, you know, how he's getting his outs, but he's striking out almost a batter per inning. He's not walking a ton of guys. His last start, 6 2/3, 1 earned run. He did give up 4 walks. He also struck out 7 batters. And he seems to consistently pitch into the 6th or 7th inning every start out there. He's another guy that I think needs to be moved up and then they can kind of, you know, figure things out from there. With that, guys, we're going to, take a quick break, for some advertisements. And then after that, we're going to get to these questions.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right, and we're back with the mailbag portion of Road to Atlanta. This is going to be an interesting one because we have a wide varying degree of topics that have been asked of us. Some of them were major league questions. We're not going to be doing those. That'd be more for like the Talking Chop podcast, things like that. But the first one, I'm gonna have to defer a little bit to Matt to start with. I have some thoughts on this guy, but David Dinwiddie asks, who is Ben Rowan and could he actually be a thing? Only 1 home run in 21 AAA innings, pretty solid career minor league numbers, and has only had a couple cups of coffee in the majors despite being 30 years old. Matt, what are your thoughts on Ben Rowan? Matt?
Oh, I was actually talking on mute there, so sorry about that. He's an interesting relief guy. He's always been a guy that's been kind of noticed, but he hasn't really been able to ever put it together and get the opportunity. I mean, it seemed like forever ago at this point that he was actually a prospect of some ability in the Texas organization. I mean, he put up some great numbers with Texas earlier in this decade. I guess that's the best way to say it.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Yeah, it was that long ago. I mean, when they had a bunch of arms that were coming up at that point, and that was, I want to say that was still back when Nolan Ryan was still involved in the decision-making and Mike Maddox was involved with coaching the pitching, that's when he was really starting to make a name for himself. He looked like a guy that could be a future closer, future setup man. I mean, he was never going to be a starter, so it's not like this is a guy that was ever a failed starter. He was always just lights out as a bullpen guy. He never actually had that massive K rate that you'd think, but the results were just insane. I mean, he had multiple years and stops with the ERA below 1 or below 2, depending on which stop it was actually at. And he just suddenly fell off from there. I mean, the numbers were still good. They just weren't quite that level good. He kicked around to a couple different teams and organizations from there. And he really completely fell off the radar for everybody. Maybe between the years 2016 or so and this year. I mean, this guy is not a guy that was really mentioned to go anywhere. I want to say last year he pitched with Louisville in AAA, and he had an ERA above 9. I mean, he did not throw many games. He just did not look like a guy that belonged in professional baseball at that point. And then he comes out this year, and he's dominating.
I will say this about him. Go ahead, Matt. Go ahead, Groff.
I was going to say, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with his arsenal just not being too sexy. He relies on, you know, how he throws. But like his fastball sits in the low 80s, and you see that against major league hitters, and you're a little wary that despite his delivery that it could be hittable. I mean, that's the only assumption I really have as to why he never took that next step.
Yeah, I think that the idea that there's just not that many Submariner, and that's what Grav's talking about, is that he does have kind of that super sidearm, almost throwing it like super softball fast pitch type delivery going for him. Grav, I actually need you to look this up on the Road to Atlanta account, because someone with suspiciously similar last name, and by that I mean the exact last name to Ben Rowan, responded to that question on the Road to Atlanta account and mentioned that he not only is still throwing Submariner, but he also added a three-quarter arm slot to like some of his pitches, which is, makes it kind of interesting. I can't imagine, like, I don't even understand how that would work. Like, sometimes you throw Submariner, sometimes it's three quarters. I'm not even sure what that gets you. But my problem, I mean, the profile in terms of like his track record, he's the kind of guy that you kind of have to sign as a journeyman, because, you know, he has a track record of performance. You know, he's kind of a quad A guy. I think it speaks a lot to the fact that what Ben Rowan's primary job has been is that when a random starter for Gwinnett needs to be called up to the Braves, his sole mission in life is to be the opener for three innings. You know what I mean? It's not that I don't like him, because I am intrigued by him, but he is a 30-year-old reliever. He's been performing really well. I think his last appearance wasn't particularly great, but, and you know, for a Braves bullpen that needs, you know, something to go right, and there's no one's really holding on to those jobs, it wouldn't be crazy to me that maybe at some point they at least give him a try at least once. But overall, it was funny that that someone responded kind of with that little nugget that he kind of did change his delivery up, or at least intermittently. I haven't had a chance to actually see him, because generally what happens is if Rowan is starting, that means that either one of the guys that was at Gwinnett got called up and I'll be watching that game, or there's been something else going on in the minor league. So I haven't actually had a chance to see him throw this year. But, you know, in terms of a profile, I don't might give him a chance, but, you know, that's just me.
I will say I'm looking at this certain person's Twitter history, and it's pretty much all about Ben. So either a family member or, you know, maybe Ben Rowan just has a big, big fan.
Well, I hope, and the information is useful. Don't get me wrong. And thank you for letting us know that he kind of made those changes to his delivery, because I think that a change like that makes him interesting. I just don't necessarily know what the benefit – I mean, truthfully, I just don't know what the benefit is to that mechanical change that makes him profile better long term. And the bigger problem is that he's 30 years old and he kind of has an atypical delivery with stuff that is a little bit debatable. And, you know, it's a little bit iffy. It's a hard profile for a reliever, but one that he's made work. So it's something we can't ignore. Next question we have is from Sam Ruffner. And Sam asks, do ranked prospects perform better when playing together? Do you think Pache Waters would be performing as well as they were on separate teams, assuming the same level? Gaurav, I'll let you talk about your boys first, and then I'll kick at the mat.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You know, I don't necessarily think that they perform better when they're playing together, but it definitely adds some fuel to the fire. You know, I'm sure they have kind of daily goals where they try to beat each other, but as a whole, I don't really think it really makes too big of an impact. I think it's fun, and I think it creates good competition. But you're talking about two absolute studs of prospects with, like, incredible tools. So while I like the story, I don't see any tangible proof that, you know, something like that actually happens.
Matt, what about you?
I actually have to agree there, too.
It's interesting to me because of how they're being used, this specific tandem. I think that generally speaking, players, the results will be better and the numbers will be better if the players around them are better, because you score more runs, you're like, more attention is going to have to be paid to the player at the plate or the player on the bases. And generally speaking, if your team is good, if your teammates are good, then it will be helpful for you. That said, what is interesting about this specific tandem is that Pache and Waters are like alternating starts in right field and center. Waters had a start in left the other day, but generally it's been like they, you know, one day Pache will be in center and the other day, you know, Waters will be in right, and then they switch back and forth. Waters has been entrenched in the leadoff spot, and Pache has stuck at second in the order. I could see a bit of competition happening there, but honestly, I think that unless they were in like a situation they really weren't enjoying, and like, so let's say they're both a double A, but like, the team was really bad and they were like, it was in a really particularly bad area or something, like, you know, like a town that they really hated. I mean, Pearl, Mississippi is not exactly a metropolitan, you know, joy, but I don't see it making that much of a difference. But however, I could see a certain amount of like a friendly rivalry, particularly with the kind of knowing that, you know, Drew is very like hard on himself and a competitive guy. I don't know if it necessarily drives Pache all that much, but I do think that it might have some marginal benefit, maybe just like marginal at best. I don't think it's something that's making them like hit the cover off the ball. I think that they're going to have ebbs and flows. We're seeing Pache going through a bit of a downswing. He hasn't had a particularly great last three games, but before that he was doing well, and Pache and Waters has had a really good few games. So I think we're going to see that back and forth. I think these guys are just really talented. And it's nice to think that maybe that they drive one another, but I think that these are two guys that are kind of driven just generally. Dan Brockett asks, how long would Pache and Waters have to continue to rake to be promoted to AAA, and how far ahead of their expected trajectory would that put them? Matt, I'm going to go to you first.
I can't see it happening before the All-Star break in the minor leagues at this point. I mean, this is a very aggressive assignment already. Putting them in AAA is another real aggressive assignment, because although it doesn't sound like much, you're seeing big league pitching. I mean, the guys that you're facing in AAA, for the most part, it's not guys that are not close to the big leagues or working through a lot of things. These are basically the guys that are in the big league pitching staff, just numbered out because they're depth guys. I mean, they're essentially big league pitchers. So asking a kid that young to face a guy who's the 13th pitcher on the Yankees roster, for example, I mean, that's not exactly easy versus facing some 23, 24-year-old kid who still, I mean, it's still good competition and still significantly better than high A, and that's why double A is the first step up. But you're really starting to face another level once you reach triple A. And obviously it's another huge step up once you face big league pitching, but you just can't rush these kids with the bat, especially a guy like Pache who's still learning how to actually take better at bats at this point.
Gaurav, what about you, bud?
Yeah, for me, I'm probably a little, I'm even more hesitant than Matt there. I think it was just a crazy aggressive assignment for Drew. You knew Pache was going to start in Mississippi because he was already there, and you like, he's raking and it's fantastic, but there's really no reason for them to be too aggressive. I personally see them staying Mississippi the entire year, and then perhaps next year they start in Gwinnett. I don't think you need to necessarily rush them. Just let them work on what they need to work with in Mississippi, and then starting next year, start to, you know, have them, like Matt said, have them face the more refined talent, but they're still facing big league talent right now.
So, I'll just go ahead and say this. I don't think that Drew Waters is getting promoted to AAA, if for no other reason that I think he's been hitting really well. There are things about his offensive profile, particularly I want him to get as many at-bats from the right side as possible and not necessarily be put in like kind of that pressure cooker of like being right at AAA, right under the microscope type of thing. I want him to get more, and I want him to start drawing walks more. And I did not think that I was going to have to say that more about him than Pache at this point in the season, but here we are. He has about 160, 170 plate appearances right now, and he's drawn like 8 walks this year, which isn't great. And I kind of want to see him when he's not kind of taking advantage of like getting some pretty fair luck on balls in play, to kind of see him be able to still produce at a high level by, you know, taking better at bats and drawing some more walks. It's kind of hard to expect that because he's kind of hitting so well right now that, you know, obviously your BABIP's going to look good during those hot streaks and you're not going to necessarily be taking as many pitches, but I kind of want to see that development in his game. He's looking really good defensively though. Pache is more interesting to me as a potential call up around I think Matt's about right. At least the All-Star break, maybe a little bit after. Pache already had some time coming into the year in AA, and so kind of if you give him that chunk of time plus maybe a little over half a season, that makes some sense to me to move him, but only if he's hitting. He's not a guy you have to rush. If for no other reason that one, Gwinnett already has an outfield that you kind of have to figure out what you want to do with those guys, whether it be to like, you know, use them on the bench or possibly trade him in the case of Adam Duvall or move them up or whatever, because Austin Riley just took the outfield spot in Atlanta, and he's playing in left field right now. We don't know how long Ender's going to be out with that back issue, and that kind of makes these roster decisions a lot trickier. Now, if there's a situation where at the trade deadline or we're getting down to it and, you know, Austin is still playing in the outfield or, you know, moving around between the outfield, third base, first base, you know, kind of moving around a little bit to kind of to keep his bat in the lineup, because, I mean, he's already 2-for-2 tonight, and he drove in a run just a little bit ago. If that's the case and you end up moving on from Ender or something like that happens, then you can kind of start making these decisions about maybe bringing up Pache and kind of seeing where he's at. But I'm not in the in both those guys' cases, I tend to agree with the other guys, is that give these guys at bats and give them some time, because honestly, right now, there's not a huge need for them. You know, if the Braves decide they want to move on from Nick Markakis at the end of the year for whatever reason, and then they need to rely on one of Pache or Waters, you can still make that same decision. I mean, it's not the craziest notion to call up someone from AA anyway, but right now I don't see the need to push them that far, especially since they've already kind of semi-converted Austin Riley into an outfielder, and they have some guys on their bench that can, you know, play some outfield spots too if necessary. The next question is from Daniel, and it says, what's up with Kyle Wright this year? Is it just his struggles sustaining velo and facing orders second and third times through? If so, could he be a long reliever candidate? Matt, I'm going to throw this one to you first, and now I've got some thoughts.
So this is the same thing that happened to Kyle his junior year at Vanderbilt when he came out. And remember, he came into that year as the likely number one pick overall, but he was not very good at all to start the year, to the point where some people were actually talking about him falling out of the first round altogether. I mean, he was overthrowing and overthinking things, and it makes sense because he had a lot of pressure on him, thinking, I need to go out and perform and show I am the number one pick this year, because while he was considered the number one, it was no guarantee he would be the number one. And I think it's just a case of that right now. I mean, if you remember, there were scouts that were saying this was the best pitcher in Florida this spring. He came out on the opening series, looked great against Philly. I mean, he battled the cold and struggled a little with command because of that, because you can't really control the ball in that kind of cold. But from there, it's just been downhill in the major leagues, gets sent down, struggles in AAA. And I really think it's just a matter. I mean, the stuff is there. He's a smart kid. He knows what he's doing, but I think he's just putting a lot of pressure on himself and overthrowing and overthinking things right now, and just needs a break and to get his head right to get back to what he is and what we know he can be, just like he did that junior at Vanderbilt when he turned himself back into another candidate for the first overall pick yet again by the end of that spring.
So I have I wouldn't say famously, but I have been, I think, lower on Wright historically than you guys have. And my reasoning for that has been partially command. And like that, we're kind of seeing some of that. I mean, like, it's not like news, and it doesn't require a lot of insight to see that, you know, he's had command issues in the past. My issue primarily has been that he looks great the first time through an order. And then one of three things happens. Either he has had plenty of good outings, you know, that gone six or seven innings, and, you know, he's looked like one of the top pitching prospects in baseball. And my qualm is not with the stuff. It's not with, like, you know, it's not like no injury stuff. It's not anything like that. I think that, you know, his pitches are graded correctly. I think that he is a really good starting pitching prospect. My primary problem has always been is that that second time through the order, he'll have some starts where he gets through that and he just mows through them and everything goes well. Or either his approach changes and he starts like nibbling and like not attacking hitters, and like he gets himself in these bad situations where he'll walk a couple guys and then he's forced to kind of like groove pitches to kind of push strikes over, or the command completely goes away altogether. And like, it's not a matter of he's not trying to attack hitters, it's that he can't. And, you know, all of a sudden pitchers are all over the place, he'll bury pitches in the dirt, the breaking ball goes away. And I don't really know what to attribute that to. I tend to agree with Matt that there's something mentally that I wouldn't say is wrong, but because that implies something that I don't mean. It's more that I don't understand how to fix it. It's very similar to a Sean Newcomb problem, right? Because like the stuff's there and he'll look great for a little while, and then all of a sudden the wheels come off. And that's what happens with Wright, is that the wheels come off and all of a sudden he'll have a big inning and a bad inning, and the overall line looks really bad and it doesn't really tell the whole story. I don't really know exactly what the answer is. The short answer to your last question, that do I think he's a long relief option? I think he'll probably see some time getting called up here and there to be a long reliever, mainly because the Braves just need bodies there right now, and there's not a spot for him in the rotation at the moment. But in terms of like that's his long-term spot, I still think he's a starter. I still think he can figure it out. The stuff's too good, and it's kind of similar to what we thought about Folty, and we've thought about other guys in the past. Newcomb's another example, is that the stuff is so good when he's good that you have to make sure that he really does fail as a starter before you convert him into a bullpen role. And I still really like him, but there's a concerns that I've had for a while now, certainly since his time in Mississippi, and even maybe a little bit of time before, maybe a little bit of concerns coming out of the draft. But again, he kind of, what Matt was talking about was true, is that he kind of came back, but that second half of his last year in college, and kind of disproved some of that. But I mean, there's similar issues and there are parallels to be drawn. I just don't know if it's something that's going to continually repeat itself. And it's something that I don't really know how to put my finger on, because it doesn't seem like it's something mechanically. It's not one pitch that's kind of failing him. It's just that he's just kind of third time through the order, he just starts looking a little rough. And I don't necessarily even think it's a velocity problem. I think it's just kind of how he's choosing to go about attacking hitters that next time through, and it's kind of that's a tougher problem to solve. Next question, we have from Patrick McCarthy, who is a champion question asker, by the way. Patrick, you know, every time I do a Q&A on Twitter, every time we do these mailbags, you're always in on them. Greatly appreciate you following along and asking questions and participating. We really appreciate it. He asks, what's going on with Ian Anderson? He seems to be struggling in most of his starts, especially with walks. Are you guys concerned? Grob, I'm going to kick it to you first.
You know, he's a bit of an enigma. You look at the walk rate and you're like, oh, crap. But then you see what, even despite like these obvious slight mechanical issues he's having, which is what I believe is the issue, he's still striking out almost 12 for 9. So am I worried about him long term? No. I still think that his ceiling is, you know, I mean, I did have him above Mike Soroka, and I know Eric wanted to kill me. But like,
and look just, how wrong you were.
Just pure stuff. You know, Ian Anderson is incredible. He just needs a little more time. He's still very, very young. It could be a little not aggravating, but it could be a little frustrating because you know he's ready to take that next step. He's ready to take that next step to become that elite pitching prospect. But there's always these slight mechanical changes that cause him to kind of lose like confidence in himself almost. And then he'll fix it, he'll right the ship, and then something will happen again, and then he'll have like 3 bad outings, and then he'll be absolutely dynamic for a month straight where he'll strike out like 11 per 9 while walking under 2, and then he'll have 1 rough start and he'll kind of, you know, compound himself. But that's just part of being a professional player. You know, he's gonna learn how to put it all together, how to become more consistent, how to turn these bad outings around and show up the next game. Like I'm fully confident in him. I'm fully confident in his skill set. I still think that he has the highest ceiling of any prospect we have or any pitching prospect we have. So am I concerned? No. Am I frustrated? Yes. Do I think it's going to be a problem for the entire season? No, not at all.
Matt, what about you, bud?
I think the command has definitely taken a slight setback so far this year, and I want to say that might actually be because the breaking balls have been slightly less than what they were in the past. They've gone slightly downhill, and this is not just my opinion. It's something I've heard from others as well, and I mean, that would definitely make sense that because the breaking ball isn't quite what it was, that he's not also commanding that because of the slight change to it. And it's something that I want to watch a little bit more going forward just to see. And I'm really thinking that he might actually be down a slight amount, not a full grade, but maybe from a future 60 value to maybe a future 55 value overall as a pitcher. And I'm thinking that might be where he's at right now as compared to where he came in at the spring. But of course, if he's able to get that breaking ball right to exactly where we saw last year, he can immediately tick back up to that future 60 value.
I don't think that the secondaries have been as good as they were last year. These are limited looks. We're talking about 35 innings this year, just for the reference, but he's walked 28 batters in 35 and two thirds this year, which is not good. I think that pace, I agree with Grob, is unsustainably bad. He's just better than that. We've never seen him walk that many guys, and I don't think that like the strike zone in the Mississippi or the hitters in Double A are so much better at taking balls that like that's the guy he is. I think that in general, it's unsustainably bad. I do agree with Matt that the command is kind of taking a step back. Particularly those breaking pitches. But the part of me that is almost concerned is that his fastball command, I mean, used to happen in previous seasons was that if he didn't have his breaking stuff, he could still pipe that fastball, particularly at the top of the zone, and still get it for strikes and get guys to swing at it. And it seems like guys aren't biting on it, and it seems to be not something he's commanding as well either, which is that compounds every problem, because if you have command of your fastball, you can kind of get away with not having the best command of your secondary pitches, because, you know, players are having to respect the fastball, and, you know, you'll get those really bad swings on like those balls in the dirt, things like that. And especially if you're kind of getting the same tunnel on your pitches, where, you know, it looks the same for, you know, that first third of the way to the plate, the batter starts to swing until he realizes it's diving away from him, it's sliding away from him, or it's a changeup. And because he's not commanding any of his pitches, he has to at least command the fastball. And it doesn't seem like he is on a consistent basis. He's still striking out batters, and honestly, the results haven't been that bad. It's not like we're talking about a guy who has an ERA of 9 this year. You know what I mean? It's a guy that, you know, has just looked consistent from inconsistent from a command perspective, and it kind of makes you worry that you're giving up this many free passes. What's going to happen when he's going against more and more advanced hitters and better hitters? But I tend to agree with Gaurav that it's a little bit frustrating to watch, and I think it might have his stock may have taken a ding. But again, he's another guy that I haven't been as high on as others. But my primary reason for that was because I didn't think that during his season in Rome that I thought he was completely healthy. I don't have any reason to believe that he hasn't been healthy. It's more of a question now of, you know, what's going on with his command. And in particular, like, he has to at least command the fastball correct. Well, if he can at least get one of those pitches, he should be in good shape.
And that's the thing. And that's why I don't take too much stock in it, is because hitters are still not hitting him, right? Hitters are hitting have a 622 opposing OPS against him. And that's mainly inflated by that walk rate. Like, he's got a 285 slugging percentage against. Like, people are still not hitting against him at all. He's causing damage to himself. And that's why I'm not, like, I'm sure I'll make sure to do what Matt said, and I'm going to watch his breaking pitches next time and see if I notice anything different. But, like, that's why I don't take too much stock into it. It looks like he's just hurting himself right now, and it's a little bit mental. And I still fully believe that he's going to right this ship, and he'll be fine by the end of the season.
Yeah, now that all three of us have, like, voiced our concerns about it, it's almost like given he's going to go 8 innings and strike out 14 batters the next time going out. Because I think that actually happened the last time the last iteration of Road to Atlanta, we were worried about, you know, Ian was, like, walking too many guys, and then he, like, had some insane start for Rome or something like that.
I mean, I should just tweet about it, and he'll end up with, like, -3 walks to his next appearance.
Yeah, they actually, like, you know, give him, like, actually, you know, we're going to take a few off his your previous line. It was so good. That'd be funny. Next question we've got is from Anonymous, which says, do Carlos Paraguate and Darlington Florentino in Rome turn into anything special, or do they have a long way to go? I'm going to throw it to Matt first because he's seen them very recently live. I'm actually going to see them, well, I won't see Darlington because he's hurt, but I'm going to go see them tomorrow. Matt, what are your thoughts on those two guys?
I first want to say you've called him Darlington. He's actually just Darling, but Darling. Yeah. Yeah, both of those guys are extremely raw. Both of those guys are going to take a very long time. Both of those guys have real talent in them, but neither of them is going to be ready anytime in the next 4 years, for sure. I mean, these guys are 5 years out if they make it. They're that kind of player. They're lottery tickets who are probably a good 5 years away from the big leagues if they're ever going to make it. They need to work significantly on their hit tool. Their defense, particularly Paraguate, is shown potential, but that needs some work to actually gain consistency. I mean, Darling is definitely behind defensively, but Darling has significant power, but he's the John Daly of low A. He just wants to rip it and rip it. He swings for the fences every time. There's huge size. There's plenty of athleticism in his large body. I mean, he's obviously a guy that the Braves are confident in enough that they're willing to challenge him as a 17-year-old by starting him in full season. Now, I get that part of that has something to do with the sanctions taking away some of the numbers and us being a little light in the farm system at that level, but they're still willing to give him the chance instead of signing some low-A minor league free agent that they could just put in the lineup. So, I mean, that does speak to what you have in him. Paraguate is definitely the speed and defense type, and he's got a little bit more pop in his bat than you'd ever expect by looking at his frame and looking at his numbers, but he definitely needs to learn how to make more consistent contact, but both of these guys do have potential.
Gaurav, what about you, bud?
I can't wait until the two of them join Izzy Wilson to create, like, one of the most dynamic teams of all time. Like, pretty much what Matt said, you know, they're super raw. There's, like, I personally am not going to, like, I don't know. There's just so much that they need to improve on right now before we you know, kind of talked too much about them. I do remember your first DM about Darling, Eric, and you're just like, that was a massive man, like a mountain of a man.
I swear I thought I was looking at a 21-year-old, and I'm like, who is that? And then someone said it was Florentino. I was like, are you serious? Like, I've, in terms of pure, like as a physical specimen, there, he really stood out. And then we started watching them during the workout, and a lot of swings looked like he was on roller skates, like his feet didn't really seem to be under him. Very similar to what we saw, like, early Rome Christian Pache. Is like, you know, like, it just felt like he was always off balance. And I like the potential for both these guys, but we're talking about a guy who, like, in Darling, who has a sub 600 OPS, and then we have Carlos Paraguate, who currently has a sub 500 OPS. I like Paraguate defensively. He does seem to have some smooth actions in the infield. Florentino's a little bit more of a, like, you know, seems a little stiffer, and it's kind of hard to see. It's hard to see what he could be, simply because he's so raw and he seems like he's still kind of learning things.
I mean, you're talking about someone who should be facing high school talent right now. He's so young. Like, it's just really, really too tough to evaluate him against his competition. It's almost unfair. Like Matt said, I'm sure a lot of it had to do with the low minors just being kind of devoid of players because of the sanctions. They're so far away that I'm happy that we've created this culture where people are asking these questions, because that's incredible. And I love how people know guys like this, but it's not really someone that's necessarily on the radar for at least like 3 years to me.
Yeah, it's going to be a while on those guys. They're nice to dream about, nice to kind of keep tabs on, because, again, they were really young when they got added to Rome's roster, but don't get your hopes up about them appearing on any top 30 prospect list anytime soon. Ryan Hutchin asks, how hard is it to gauge position player versus pitcher stats when going from high A Florida to double A Mississippi or triple A, since the FSL is such a pitcher-friendly league? Do you just take some stats with a grain of salt for both hitters and pitchers at high A? I don't want to dwell on this too long, guys, because we want to try to get through this without, you know, making the podcast run too long. So I'll go to Gaurav first.
You know, I tend to shy away from making too many claims about someone until I actually see them, at least, like, see them on MILB TV, like, and it's not really something we can do when they're high A. So I tend to not evaluate too much with players in that league.
Matt, what about you?
Really, the only thing that I try to evaluate stat-wise without actually seeing a player is the strikeout rate for a hitter. I mean, obviously, it's hard to really judge by scouting a stat line, but if a guy's striking out 35 or 40% of the time, you can clearly see that the guy's got major hit tool issues. But other than that, it's more about actually seeing the player and watching them on video, watching them live, than just looking at a stat line. I mean, the stats are comparable in some way, but you really have to know what you're looking at to be able to compare that, because you're looking at, let's say, and I realize this isn't in the Braves system, but how can you compare a guy from Rome to a guy from Asheville in the Sally League? Because Asheville is one of the most hitter-friendly parks out there. So you're going to have to compare not just third baseman to third baseman, for example, but you're going to have to compare third baseman in more of a neutral-type stadium to third baseman in an extreme hitter's park at that same level. And obviously, when you get up to high A, you're talking about the Florida State League, which is notoriously pitcher-friendly, the California League, which is probably the most hitter-friendly league out there, which includes the PCL, and you're also talking about the Carolina League, which is more of a neutral environment compared to the other ones. And then Double A has its own set of environments, so you really have to take all that into account.
It's definitely trickier for us, because we've certainly tried to scout the Florida State League before, and our experience is there that it rains in Florida every day. And
it's impossible. They never play baseball in Florida.
Yeah. And I mean, and we've seen this happen. Like the Fire Frogs had to play 3 games in 24 hours, like just this week, because there were so many rainouts. They had to try to squeeze as many games. I think it was 3 games. It might've been 4, but I think it was just the 3. And like, that whole league and that whole situation is really tough. What I would say for you is, yes, you should take everything, the numbers that you can, with a grain of salt, especially since you can't watch them live, whether via stream, unless you're like, they're in Bradenton, which I think is the only Florida State team, Florida State League that has a stream. But look at batted ball profiles. At least look for improvements there. A good example there is Grayson Janista. While his numbers don't look great this year, it's worth noting that he's still walking a good bit. Also, he's increased his fly ball rate, which is going to be worse in that league. And he's pulling the ball more. There are things about his peripherals that don't necessarily show up in the stat lines that you would normally look at. But in terms of those batted ball profiles of like how things are changing and he's hitting less ground balls and hitting more line drives and more fly balls, those are things we all look at too. So the short answer is yes, we take things with a grain of salt. Coming out of the Florida State League, we do our best to talk to people who are actually watching these games. I was actually talking to a couple people earlier this week about a couple players down there, and it's tricky to be sure, especially since we're both Groff and I are in Georgia and Matt's all the way up in Pittsburgh, and it's tricky to kind of see some of these guys live. But at the end of the day, you have to kind of at least get what information you can, as well as just trying to make sure you can find some people who have seen them live as well, and put together as complete a picture as you can until they get out of that league, which I hope that they won't be in that particular location for much longer anyway. I'm going to throw this question only to Grav, because I think Matt has a little bit of a surprise question to end the podcast. This is from John Gree. Is Travis Demeritt for real? Grav, what do you think?
Yeah, so this is something I actually would love to talk about, and I do think it is legitimate. His hit tool, he's hitting a little higher than expected at 298. That's not who he is as a player. I expect that to go down just a bit, but he's still walking at an elite rate. The slugging percentage is back up to something that we expect. I'm sure some of it's inflated with the triple A ball, but, his OBP and slugging has always been his bread and butter. He's always done well, and now his hit tool looks like it's starting to come around. He's becoming a crazy balance at the plate now. He's pulling the ball as much as he's going the opposite field. Everything else is roughly the same. The line drive rate went back up to normal careers, back when I think his line drive rate is actually as high or almost as high as it was back when he was a Ranger and when everyone was really talking about him a whole lot. Like, I do think it's real. I think expect the batting average to go down. I don't think, because his swing is so conducive to generate backspin, that he is going to have, you know, he's going to strike out a good amount because of the level that his bat goes through. But I think this is real. I think he's legitimate. You know, he's not going to be this like incredible stud, but he's going to be an extremely versatile player that can play many positions. Think Johan Camargo. Like, I'd say very similar type players right now, and, you know, let him play out the season in AAA. I know he's 24, 25 now. I say let him finish out unless he's absolutely killing the ball, and then seriously consider him in Atlanta to create like almost this incredible bench, up over in Atlanta. Like, when you're thinking about all these players, yeah, the Braves could have a crazy complete team next year, and it's getting me a little excited.
Yeah, I think we forget a little bit about Demeritt's utility, because he played mostly in the infield for the longest time, and then he kind of converted to the outfield starting last year in AA. I think it'd be kind of like almost the inverse of Camargo, in that he'd like see more time in the outfield than in the infield. But I think we thought he was like a plus defender at second base. Third base, I don't think he enjoys a whole lot, but he could feasibly do it, and I think that's his best path, because if any player is going to benefit from the new baseball in AAA as well as in the major leagues, it's going to be Travis Demeritt, just because of his bat path, kind of how his overall batting profile and things like that. I think he could end up being a really interesting player. I wouldn't call like a 900 OPS, like that's what he's going to be when he gets to the majors, if and when he gets to the majors, but I think he could have value, and I think that's the important thing. Now, Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, I would expect, you know, batting average to be like 265 to 270, which means his OBP would be closer to like the 350 range, and then you bring down the OPS a whole lot. But the slugging at 526, 425 to 490 is probably his sweet spot, I would say. But yeah, you know, he's kind of a complete player. I like what he's putting together, and I really hope that it continues.
So now we have a note here from our own Matt Powers that he has a question that he wants to ask Rob and I. So we are all ears, bud. What's up?
So this is not a normal question for us. It's a topic that we wouldn't necessarily touch on normally, but I think it actually is very relevant timeline-wise. So back in the offseason, the Braves got a lot of negative attention because they didn't make a big move. And one of the biggest moves that they came really close on was getting JT Realmuto from the Marlins. Obviously, he went to the Phillies. But if you remember, one of the biggest pieces involved in getting him was Austin Riley, which obviously plays into the right now factor for this. And that's what I'm going to actually touch on. So, knowing what you know now, and we're only a couple months after the trade at this point, and you know Riley's going to be up for the year because they didn't recall Austin Riley to be up for 2 weeks to send him back down when they could have just brought up Adam Duvall. So who would you rather have right now, today, both for this year and for going forward? Would you rather have Realmuto in the lineup, or would you rather have Riley? Obviously, you do have to factor in age. The fact that JT is going to need a new contract soon, and he's going to make quite a bit of money, and the fact that Contreras is also in the minor leagues. I mean, which side would you prefer, both right now and in the future at this point?
Gaurav, you want to handle it first, or you want me to go?
Yeah, sure, I'll go. This is a interesting question because it shouldn't be interesting. Like, it should be a very open and shut case. You're talking about a multi-all-star catcher who has one of the most dynamic skill sets at that position. But when you factor in everything else, you talk about the upcoming contract, it creates a little uncertainty, and it's really surprising. I think I have to be responsible and say JT, but the fact that this is an actual question makes me very happy inside.
Yeah, my issue with some of this sort of hindsight stuff is that no one in the three of us thought that Austin Riley was going to be mashing at AAA and in the major leagues the way he is right now. And that doesn't necessarily we've liked him for a long time. We've probably liked him and known about him longer than most, right? So I don't necessarily think that it's fair to say that the Braves like really got lucky to not trade for Realmuto, because Realmuto has still been good this year. The overall offensive profile hasn't been exactly what we expected to see from him and what we had seen from him from the Marlins, but getting that from a premium position, even for just a couple years, is a big deal. I mean, we're not talking about just a rental. You get an extra year out of him. However, I will say this. I tend to agree with Grav that I think that the correct answer is still you prefer Realmuto. You can revisit this down the line, and if, you know, Austin Riley has 30 home runs at the end of the year, then obviously that changes the calculus a bit. But we're still talking about a guy who's still just a prospect and who still has had a track record of some things that haven't always gone right. And while that's an easy thing to talk about, you know, like, look how good he's hitting now, look how dumb these guys were for wanting to trade for Realmuto, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the bigger problem was that it wasn't just that the Braves had to trade Austin Riley. It was that they're going to have to trade a big package. The Phillies put together a real package to go get him, to go get Realmuto. And I respect that. It wasn't just simply, you know, the Braves were unwilling to trade Austin Riley. It was just the sheer amount of the whole package. But I will say this. JT Realmuto is going to be a free agent at some point. And it's probably going to – and I don't necessarily think that he would – it's not a given that he extends with Philly. And if that's the case, there is a situation, particularly with the Braves' current timeline. It depends a little bit on William Contreras, but it's still possible.
I would laugh so hard.
If Realmuto just ends up as a Brave anyway. You know what I mean? It might not, maybe not the trade that they were one that we were hoping for this year, but it's not a crazy notion to think that, you know, the Braves could see maybe Contreras isn't the long-term answer. I still think Contreras is really good. But, you know, maybe that they go ahead and get Realmuto anyway, just in free agency. So that's my long story short, saying that I would still think that's Realmuto, just because of the certainty at a position, at a premium position. But the Braves are not in a bad position right now. I mean, the catching platoon, I mean, Flowers and McCann have been really, really good. And obviously Riley's been at catcher, and Riley's been really good, you know, this year in general. So it's not something that I lose a lot of sleep over either, if that makes any sense.
And I actually have the opposite opinion about you guys. I mean, if you remember anything that I said in the offseason, I was higher than anyone on our catchers presently. I'm talking McCann and Flowers here, that I thought those guys are a significantly above average catcher. I mean, when you combine them into one position instead of two different guys, when you look at their combined production, you're getting a very good offensive catcher, and you're getting a lot of veteran leadership from that. And I think while I didn't expect Riley to be this good, I did expect him to be up fairly early in the season. I was probably thinking June or so at the start of the year. And he adds something that the Braves don't have, and they still wouldn't have had if they had JT, because Riley's probably the best pure power threat in that lineup right now. And JT definitely would not have been that guy. So you're saving money. You're saving Riley plus whatever else you were going to have to give, and there was definitely quite a bit more. You're saving money, even though it's a slight downgrade at catcher, and I don't think it's quite as big as the downgrade that some people would have made it out to be. Obviously, having JT in there is the best catcher in the game, but the guys that we have in there right now, for everything they bring, the complete package, they're very good. And having that extra power threat in there, plus having the age that you're going to have to give JT that big contract to actually keep him and make that trade package worth it, definitely puts things in the favor of Riley's side for me.
See, that's where it gets a little bit tricky for me, and we'll just end here and say that there are positives for the Braves not doing that deal, right? Is that they're, you know, they still get to keep Riley. Obviously, he's been really good. I didn't necessarily think he was going to be up by June, mainly because the primary problem was that since he wasn't getting time in the outfield, particularly in spring training, and we don't, that his place as an outfielder wasn't something that we were necessarily factoring in for. Because the Braves signed Donaldson, it makes it tricky to try to get him in there unless Donaldson's injured long term, and that kind of creates separate problems, right? But this is something we can revisit once we get through the whole season, and then we see how the catching tandem of Flowers and McCann performs, because I completely agree. They've been insanely good. I think it's been like, I mean, catcher's been one of the better positions in the lineup just because Flowers was really hot. McCann has had his moments and has been driving in runs. And, you know, in terms of like, you know, managing and pitching staff, you can't ask for two better guys. I completely agree with that. But these are two older catchers, and I don't necessarily want to put a grade on a move when we're kind of – part of it we're factoring in is just how good McCann and Flowers have been when we don't know how they're going to be overall a full season. And I just don't know if both those guys are going to make it through a full season healthy. I mean, we already saw McCann miss some time with a hamstring thing, and it's just a hamstring. We haven't had any reason to believe that's something that's lingering. He's still been playing recently, and he's been playing well at that. But I don't necessarily want to draw too many conclusions from that sample size to say the Braves ended up better overall, because I think that there's room for both Real Muto to be better in Philadelphia and for the players that we're talking about on the Braves side to be worse. And I don't think there's necessarily a wrong answer, really, because, I mean, like, obviously the Braves have it's turned out really well for them in the short term. In terms of not having to give up these real assets. And the biggest part, I think, is what Matt Mastin mentions, is the extra part of that package is going to be Austin Riley plus other real, like, major league ready assets. And that's a big package to give up for any player. And the Phillies, you know, they ponied up, they gave up Sixto Sanchez, they gave up, you know, they gave up like a major league ready catcher, they gave up a lot of real assets to go get him. And, you know, I can respect it, but for me, I think it's still, I would prefer Real Muto, but at the same time, I respect the decision not to, especially since I don't know exactly what Miami wanted in terms of the overall package. But if it's just like, you know, well, thank God they didn't get rid of Austin Riley. It's not just trading away Austin Riley. It's just that total package, if that's too much, it's too much and you can't do it. And that's kind of where my general thought process is. Any last thoughts before we let our listeners go?
That's it for me at this point. I'm just excited to get on next week and talk to Carlos and talk more draft, because I can't wait to talk more draft.
That'll be another episode where I just sit here, because Carlos is, like, seriously one of the most intelligent baseball minds I've ever come across. So it's going to be fun to just shut up and listen to Matt and Carlos.
He's not here yet, Gaurav. You don't have to start sucking up to him yet.
Although Gaurav is not wrong, Carlos is great. I mean, as much as I know about the draft, Carlos definitely knows more.
I'm hoping he gets mad at me because of my top 900, and then a week later he had to put out a piece that was like the top 400 in the draft or something like that. I'm hoping he brings that up.
I think he might be a little mad at me at the moment, because I, without realizing it, and I want to apologize to him, I criticized Eric's tweet last week about Langliers being a possibility for the Braves at 9, not realizing that Carlos had just put a mock draft up with Braves taking him at 9. So I had not realized it and started criticizing it, and Carlos jumped in and made a comment on that, and I'm thinking he might have been defending his information there, and I did not see that at that point. I saw it after the fact, but sorry, Carlos.
Well, I've talked to Carlos since then, and, you know, he's certainly willing to come on the podcast, if only to shout at Matt, and that's totally fine with me. But we're looking forward to hearing from Carlos next week to talk about the draft. Lots of draft talks have been coming up. I'm just going to give you guys a heads up about that now. That's why we did the mailbag episode, because we're going to try to get you caught up on prospect stuff. Because the next few weeks for us, leading up to the draft, it's going to be a lot of draft talk, just because that's going to be a big part of the year, both for the site as well as the kind of what we're doing. Because this is going to be a big part of what the Braves are going to be adding to the farm system over the next few years. We don't expect them to have a high draft pick going forward. They're not going to be signing guys in the international free agent market for the next couple of years. So this is going to be the wave that's going to be like the last wave for a while, without kind of really digging in with the scouting department and maybe getting a little bit lucky in some later round picks. So with all that said, guys, make sure you follow the podcast on Twitter at @Road2Atlanta. You can always, if you want to listen to this podcast, or if you want to listen to the Talking Chop podcast, you only need to subscribe to one feed. That's the Talking Chop feed on iTunes. You can find us on various platforms, Stitcher. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us all over the place. We really appreciate all the support since the podcast has came back. It's been a lot of fun for us. Unless we have anything else, guys, we'll see you on the road.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot, because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.